Now, in 2016, South Africans were horrified when the Life Esidimeni scandal broke. A reminder to listeners, 144 patients at psychiatric facilities in Gauteng died due to starvation and neglect. They had been moved by the health department out of the care of their former private healthcare provider, dumped at a variety of different NGOs and care centres, many of whom were completely ill-equipped to care for them. And it's been referred to as one of the greatest human rights violations in South African history. To date, nobody yet prosecuted for their role. The official inquest into the matter wrapped up in the Pretoria High Court late last year. So we await the court's findings and recommendations. But the question today is, has anything really changed in terms of how our public health system treats psychiatric patients? And the answer is not a whole lot. Not if last night's edition of Carte Blanche was anything to go by anyway. It took us behind the scenes of what was meant to be a state-of-the-art psychiatric hospital in Kimberley that is anything but. To tell us more about investigating the story, it's my pleasure to welcome on the line once again Carte Blanche producer Jana Marks. Jana, lovely to have you on the show again. Welcome.
Hi, Baba. Nice to be on the show. Hi to the listeners.
Thanks for your time. I mean, before the opening of this new hospital in Kimberley, let's take it back a few steps. What sort of psychiatric facilities, if any, were available in the public sector in the Northern Cape?
Yeah, the Northern Cape, they had a complete shortage of available treatment for patients. There was only a small hospital in Kimberley. It was a constant lack of shortage of beds for people there. I mean, that small hospital was supposed to serve the entire Northern Cape. I mean, you can imagine how far people need to drive. And yeah, it wasn't sufficient, not at all. I've looked at some of the submissions in front of Parliament. There's a shortage in specialized staff. People haven't had help for decades before this little hospital came to existence. Back in the early 2000s.
Okay. Then in 2019, with some fanfare, the opening of the new Kimberley Mental Health Hospital. And it was delayed. It was over budget. It was one of those typical stories. Jana, it had taken more than a decade longer to finish than anybody thought. It came in at 7 times over budget. It was the subject of multiple lawsuits. It had been through multiple contractors. The costs had ballooned from an initial estimate of 290 million to more than 2 billion rand. And just remind us, at the time, the provincial premier, when he opened this particular new state-of-the-art mental health facility, remind us of the catchphrase you used in that show last night of how he described this supposedly wonderful new facility.
Yeah, I think not even a premier could turn a blind eye to the fact that at that stage, and quote-unquote, that building was a monument of corruption because of the construction issues, the tender issues that's been going on for years. By the way, I mean, this project was born in the tenure of a former MEC of Public Works, John Block. He's recently been charged in connection with this very build, just by the way, side note.
Because isn't he already in jail for other corruption and money laundering cases?
Yeah, well, he's still serving his sentence for that. He's out on parole. And while out on parole, he's charged with this new case.
Okay, so that's interesting that there is perhaps some action going to follow. What your slot last night revealed, though, Jana, is the difference between what it could have been and what it was meant to be, and what is actually there and what services are being provided today. At the opening in 2019, a great deal of money spent and a long time spent building a facility that was meant to offer really widespread services on several different levels. Can you explain to us what was there initially when it opened?
Yeah, well, this would have been the facility that everyone was waiting for to make up for the smaller, understaffed one. And that would have been big hospital, not only serving the entire Northern Cape, but they state-of-the-art equipment. They have different sections, not general psychiatric care, and then there's the forensic unit where accused people would go while awaiting psychiatric evaluation, those who are busy with court cases. And there's also a section or a unit, like a prison unit, almost. If you can't be sentenced for mental health reasons, then you go to that hospital. So you have your very hardcore criminals there as well. So there's just a wide variety of psychiatric services, and that will be the only one. So all the duties of the smaller one, who's now only a dating TB patient.
Okay, so all absorbed into this, and it's a very large facility from the looks of what you showed us last night.
Huge.
Jana, yeah. Huge, but what it looks like today versus what it was meant to be couldn't be more different. So describe to us, I believe there are roughly 170 patients who are still resident in this facility. Describe to us what your team discovered when you went to visit and what you saw there.
Yeah, so this facility is still at about only 53% capacity. But that was not the biggest issue. So we were confronted with evidence, hard evidence, since January. Whistleblowers, people that, staff members, that just said we can't work in these circumstances anymore. We are at risk. Our patients are at risk. We can't fulfill our Hippocratic oath as nursing staff. And what they showed us was just terrible. Holes in ceilings. It seems like a ceiling will collapse on anyone at any time. They told us they haven't had power. We are now in April, since October last year. They haven't had any power. They have generators, two generators, smaller generators, very insufficient. And you can't, they are running on a schedule similar to load shedding with the small generators. And time and again, the fuel would run out. They would be, they would be caught in darkness for days on end. So that situation, it looks like the one very, very apt description. It says it's like a jungle. Yeah. Around that hospital. It's unkept. And when the power is out, the toilets can't flush. So basic human hygiene stuff. Yeah. The staff would tell us the patients are filthy. They can't bathe because no one wants to bathe in cold water all the time. Or the staff would go home and boil some kettles just to bring back to the hospital for people to be able to bathe or wash their clothes. There's no functioning laundry unit. And the power issue is obviously very problematic because the security systems at the hospital are electric driven. So it will be your CCTV cameras and your doors that will close and shut or be locked with power. Now that there's no power, they can't shut the doors because it becomes a health and safety hazard. So they just leave them open. And the hardened criminals that I've just mentioned, they can roam free in the hospital, have access to anyone else. Those are people that live inside the hospital. That's like it's their home.
Yeah. Just for anybody who's coming late to the interview, our guest on the line is Carte Blanche producer Jana Marks, who put together last night's segment on the state of decay of Kimberley's Mental Health Hospital, a facility which was delivered and opened to the public in 2019, having taken 13 years to complete and 2 billion rand of taxpayers' money to build, only to descend into, it looks derelict. Jana, you see footage of snakes in, snakes all over the hospital because the grounds are so unkempt. Patients not being able to be served warm food. What you said about the cleanliness and the lack of laundry, and you think about what that means for hygiene and germs in a hospital setting. It's just unthinkable. Now let's talk about
hospital.
Yeah, what this means for the patients is dreadful enough. For their families who had thought that at last they were being given a lifeline, that finally, after years of struggling to care for really severely mentally debilitated patients at home or in substandard facilities, that finally somebody had cared enough to give them the hospital they needed. It must feel like such a betrayal. Tell us a little bit about what they told you.
Yeah, so they told me in so many words, government is letting them down. Where should they go? If this hospital closes down, because I know there's a pending investigation or ultimatum set by the Labor Department, that they need to fix things. They have a deadline, full staff. The circumstances are unbearable for staff. You can't work in those conditions. But if something happens and the hospital close a shop because you can't continue working like that or living like that, where should those people go?
And what about the staff who continue to go back to work day after day? Jana, that's what is so extraordinary about this story was the compassion that it requires, the commitment to your job to, and yes, you can argue, well, if there's no other job to go to, you'll put up with awful conditions. But you got the feeling last night that many of these staff members are staying on because of that Hippocratic oath that they took, that they said if they go, there's even less supervision of and care for these patients and what will become of them. But, the attrition of staff in those kind of circumstances has got to be high. Where does that leave the sort of staff-patient ratio?
Ratio is about just over 1 to 1, which is which is quite similar to what you would get in an intensive care unit, interestingly yep. enough. And those patients don't really require, you know, assistance every minute of every day. But we are seeing, and that's something that we didn't cover in the insert last night just because of time constraints, but we are seeing strange, very suspicious appointments, which is definitely something that journalists or even us can look into for a follow-up. So, yeah, there are definitely questions to be asked. But at this stage, they have the staff, let's say they have a care staff, a clinical yeah. staff and non-clinical staff, but then you have 15 laundry aid workers and you don't have a working laundry department.
Yeah.
Or you don't have psychiatrists. How can you be a mental facility if you don't have psychiatrists? So there's a huge shortage of special skills. Yes, yeah. maybe there aren't enough care staff, but special skills is... They can't keep special skilled people because no one wants to work there.
Yeah. Now, Jana, of course, the million-dollar question is who is held to account for this disastrous state of affairs? Because the budget was allocated to run this as a fully functional hospital. Mm-hmm. What went wrong?
Yeah, so I can't really see that there's not enough budget. There is enough budget. The funds are just severely mismanaged. That's what we also showed on the internet last night. They would pay, let's say, R500,000 for a golf cart. That might be the most expensive golf cart I've ever encountered in the entire country. They would pay 3 times the price for a quad bike. Why would a mental health facility need a quad bike? I'm not entirely sure. Then there's suspicion of orders, linen and pajamas and, you know, normal patient things that the staff haven't seen. The footage or the undercover footage and pictures we obtained show a shortage of linen. There might be one sheet on a bed, not, you know, like a 2 million or a 1 million worth of order. It doesn't make yeah. sense at all. So the funds are there. The funds are just being mismanaged. And, the Department of Health, they are obviously liable. They are accountable for all of this. And also the hospital, the CEO tried to exonerate himself saying procurement is not my thing. But it's not true. He has an oversight role.
Yeah. The buck stops on your desk. Yeah.
At the very least, then you need to report suspicious payments if you didn't know about it or if you just see it. Maybe it goes through your hands over your desk, but you need to report this. Surely if you use funds allocated for something else, then there isn't going to be funds for the other thing that you wanted
yeah.
to spend money on. So you have to know what's going on in your budget. You just can't say, sit back and say, oh, sorry, I didn't know about this. This was something that the Department of Health signed off on.
I mean, he can't physically have not noticed that the hospital is falling to pieces around him. It's unless, of course,
Absolutely.
He's never setting foot in it, which is a possibility, I guess. I mean, Jana, I watched that segment and honestly, my thought walking away from it was, this is another life Esidimeni in the making. It is people mm-hmm. who are so vulnerable, who need such acute sets of eyes over watching their care, and families who are relying on the state to help with this management and are being let down. And I worry, you know, it's only so long that even the most dedicated healthcare professional can continue to tolerate working in circumstances like that.
Yeah.
What happens when they finally break and say, that's it, I'm out of here, and there is nobody left behind to care for those patients? I mean, we've seen how long it has taken to get to the end of the Life Esidimeni inquiry all these years later. We still haven't seen any heads roll for it. I'm sure you and your team must have had similar thoughts in your head about how awfully there are shades of that same story in this one.
Well, what I do know is there's been ongoing investigations into the Department of Health in Northern Cape. They don't really have a very great track record of spending government funds or taxpayer funds. So I think this, we are hoping that this would become part of an investigation. Mm-hmm. We know that the former acting HOD is currently facing fraud charges. There are many interlinked things, and I think this hospital might be one of the many links, and I really hope that it will be part of any ongoing investigation.
And Jana, I hope your segment last night will help apply some pressure for those who are in control of the investigations to get moving. Jana Marks, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, and always a pleasure to have you on the show. Jana produced that segment last night, and if you missed it, just a reminder, firstly, if you do have DSTV access, you are welcome to look for the catch-up. Use the catch-up facility to look for last night's episode. If you don't have DSTV access, give it a day or two, because the video segments normally come to the Carte Blanche website by roughly the middle of the following week after they've aired on DSTV. Very, very concerning. As I said to Jana, I was left with the feeling that this is watching yet another disaster in the making. It is encouraging to know that at least charges have been brought against some of the individuals involved here. But, here we sit. What was it, 2016 that the Life Esidimeni scandal broke? It's now 2024. 8 years later, we haven't yet seen anybody prosecuted. Are we going to see the same thing play out here? We'll be having this conversation with Jana again in 2032. I really hope it'll be sooner than that.